readers of today's Lansing State Journal are seeing an article about Mr. Ernst Floater, who for years has been a photographer, was a photographer in Grand Ledge. Mr. Floater passed away here about a year ago, and there's an article here by Rachel Greco about the estate sale for the Mr. Floater. I'll remind our listeners, if you're intrigued by that and by Mr. Floater's story, which is incredible in and of itself, he was a German soldier, served in the infantry during World War II. He was not a supporter of Adolf Hitler, and 12 days after D-Day was captured by the United States and ended up spending almost 2 years in the United States as a prisoner of war. Extraordinary story. I'll remind you, if you're intrigued by that, the late Mr. Floater spent a few minutes with us here on Current State back in 2014. If you go to our website, wkar.org, it's a pretty good segment. Interesting man. I'm Mark Bayshore. Welcome back to Current State. The Republican National Convention in Cleveland has nominated Donald Trump for president. The party's also formally nominated Indiana Governor Mike Pence for vice president. The Michigan delegation delayed announcing its vote total so that Trump's home state of New York could put the nominee over the top. When state party chair Ronna Romney McDaniel later announced Michigan's votes, Trump received 51 of them. Texas Senator Ted Cruz got 6 votes from Michigan. 2 went to Ohio Governor John Kasich. Here on the day after the Trump nomination, Current State will talk with 2 of Michigan's delegates to the GOP convention. We'll talk with a Kasich delegate, Representative Phil Potvin, in a few minutes. First, though, we have on the line a Trump delegate from Michigan. Senator Joe Hune represents Michigan's 22nd Senate District, which includes Livingston and part of Washtenaw counties. Welcome to Current State, Joe Hune.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on. What an exciting week it's been.
I can imagine. 2 nights of the convention are now behind us. Describe the atmosphere for us there in Cleveland.
Exciting. You know, just exciting. And now, as we officially have nominated Donald Trump to be our candidate, we're going to spend the next couple of days making certain that we are together and united to beat Hillary Clinton.
What are Michigan delegates talking about, Joe?
You know, it's excitement. We have, as you mentioned, 51 votes for Donald Trump. So it's an overwhelming majority of our delegates there on the convention floor supporting Donald Trump. And, again, it's so exciting. And to look around and see all of the political folks that we've all looked up to for so many years, literally walking by it, I shook hands with Lou Dobbs last night, and our little, I got to take our one-year-old on the floor of the convention, so it's his first convention at 1 year old, and it's just a special honor. We're so excited, and we're so excited to be able to work hard to take this country back.
What do you make of the speakers so far? I mean, we've seen members of the Trump family. We saw Rudy Giuliani, Chris Christie delivered a blistering speech last night. Overall, good lineup of speakers?
Absolutely phenomenal. We started out the convention with the conservative movement's, some of our favorite celebrities. Willie Robertson from Duck Dynasty opened the convention. But I'll tell you what, Donald Trump Jr. gave an absolutely phenomenal speech last night. Melania Trump, she was the keynote the night before, and I think she got a few bad headlines saying that some of the speech was similar to Michelle Obama's, but she was absolutely phenomenal. But then it dug deeper. Some of the other speakers dug deeper, as you mentioned. Rudy Giuliani, I mean, he gave the most impassioned, riveting speech about how really questioning how secure our country is today, and we need to change direction. And, of course, Chris Christie pointed out the faults of Hillary Clinton and everything she's been guilty of in terms of foreign policy over the past her past tenure in service.
Let me ask you, was Donald Trump your original choice?
He was. I endorsed Donald Trump before the Michigan primary, and a lot of my conservative brethren gave me an awful hard time. But I'll tell you what. He won Livingston County, one of the counties that I represent in the Senate, and he's literally more than a candidate. He is, I mean, we talk about this, but I think it's absolutely true. He is a movement. When you talk about issues like trade, where the United States gets into these trade deals, and it appears that we just put our workers in the lowest on the priority list when we talk about trade. And, of course, immigration and his piece of his platform of building the wall between the United States and Mexico. And I was in the platform committee to develop the platform for this convention and for the next 4 years. And we worked hard to make certain that that reference to building the wall was in the platform, and we adopted it on Monday.
Well, Mr. Trump has been a very controversial figure here in the run-up to the convention here for over a year here now. His critics would claim that a racist, a xenophobe, is running for president. What do you say to those critics?
I say that's nothing but hogwash. And if you look at Hillary Clinton, all you have to do is just take a look at who the Democrats are going to officially nominate next week. I mean, the Justice Department came out here, in the last couple of weeks, said, you broke the law, you did all of these terrible things to put the United States and our people in harm's way, but we don't think we're going to prosecute you. I mean, they pretty much said she was a felon without actually prosecuting. So all you have to do is take a look at her, and you will automatically say, wow, we are definitely going to get behind Donald Trump. So he's going to, you know, get pummeled by the mainstream media, which is the normal process from a Republican perspective. But at the end of the day, he received more votes across this country than any Republican candidate has ever received. And the turnout was overwhelming in Michigan in our primary, and I'm certain it's going to be come November.
Some have described the platform as the most conservative ever put forth by the GOP. You said you played a role here in putting this platform together. Are there components of the platform that you wish were different?
You know, it is a large document, and we probably should shorten that document. I think we need to, in future years, future conventions, shorten our document and say these are our guiding principles and these are the things that the Republican Party stands for. But it's kind of, the process of developing the platform is like legislation. And when you're working in the legislature or serving in the legislature, there's give and take, and folks from different regions, different communities, different areas have issues that they want to see addressed. So that's what's in our platform. We had folks from the western states that brought up issues that may not necessarily impact folks from the eastern states, or, you know, folks from California had different concerns than folks from Maine. But I think it's a good document. And the one, you know, we had a few main principles I wanted to see addressed, including building the wall. And I was so excited and so supportive of making certain that that was in there, and we got it done.
They would end abortion under any circumstances, from what I'm told, defund Planned Parenthood. It would repeal gay marriage rights. This is definitely a diversion from a change of direction in recent years. It is a direction that you espouse and are comfortable with.
I'll tell you what, I think you're reading more headlines than the platform itself. We have consistently been supportive of traditional marriage. The platform that we just adopted on Monday maintains that belief that marriage is between a man and a woman. So nothing has changed from the previous platforms on that component. And the party has consistently been pro-life in terms of its platform, and we maintain that in this platform as well. So it's the press just trying to divide our community and divide our Republican party, but that's it.
Of course, we live in an age where after the U.S. Supreme Court has legalized gay marriage. I mean, that has been a profound change as well, but you still stick with the supporting traditional marriage in the platform.
We haven't changed in our philosophies and our belief that marriage is between a man and a woman. Heck, Roe v. Wade was, abortion was legalized decades ago, and our party is still supportive of the pro-life position. So not an issue to me.
State Senator Joe Hewn is a Donald Trump delegate here. We're talking with Senator Hewn from Cleveland here this morning on WKAR's Current State. I have to ask you, did you have any interaction with any delegates who tried to alter the convention rules earlier this week to find an alternative to Mr. Trump?
Of course, there was jockeying going on behind the scenes, but it all failed. And in fact, if you watched or saw the rules process, so before the committee or the actual convention meets, there are four committees that meet. The platform committee is one. The rules committee is another. And they adopt our rules for our party and for the convention for the next 4 years. And there was an effort underway to change the rules to essentially pull the rug out from Donald Trump. But the effort was pathetic and minimal at best.
What do you make of the sentiment that drives that, though? Obviously, I mean, Mr. Trump has had a very high negative rating. What do you make of Mr. Trump's critics, generally?
In terms of the actual operatives that are trying to change this in favor of another candidate, I think it's politics as usual, I should say, for that, because you see these in conventions past, one candidate angling, despite being out of the race, still angling to negotiate for something down the road. And I think it's just a normal political process at these conventions. The past few conventions for the Republican Party, the nominee was decided long before the actual convention. Well, this has just been a longer process in recent years, and we'll definitely see these folks come around and get behind our nominee.
State Senator Joe Hewn is our guest. We were planning to reach out to State Rep. Phil Potvin of Cadillac here in a few minutes. We're having some challenges connecting with Representative Potvin. Hopefully we'll pull that off here. But if you've got a few more minutes here to spend with us, Joe Hewn, we'll take you up on it. Mr. Trump may be representing an exception. Still, if the atmosphere in November resembles today's, Mr. Trump may be representing a pretty divided party. How important is it for Trump to more closely unite the party between now and November?
Oh, absolutely essential. And I think he's doing that. When we talk about some of these policies, you know what? When you talk about, look at Trump's platform, he's talking about issues that have been uncomfortable to both parties, whether it's the Democrat Party or the Republican Party. I think our Republican Party has lost sight of making America and our American workers first when they talk about international trade and all of these agreements that essentially, you know, leave the American worker behind. And both parties have been reluctant to address the immigration issue between the United States and Mexico, and particularly building the wall. And it is such a huge pillar and component of the Trump platform that got him through the primary that turned out enormous numbers of new voters that we haven't seen in ever that helped Trump catapult him to this point. So times are changing, and he is developing things that need to be addressed and talking about things that need to be addressed but are uncomfortable for the traditional politicos to actually do.
Mr. Trump's vice presidential candidate, Mike Pence, addresses the convention today. What do you make of Mike Pence?
I think he was good, and when you asked a couple of questions over the last few minutes about making certain the whole party's behind him, I think the choice for Mike Pence to be the VP candidate is nothing but helpful to make certain that the base is supportive of Donald Trump.
How serious a stumble was Melania Trump's speech here? It appears she lifted a number of sentences pretty directly from Michelle Obama's speech from 8 years ago. How big an infraction is that? Should heads roll in the Trump campaign? What?
You know, I don't know how those decisions are made within the campaign itself, but the first lady or the female or the spouse, I should say, of our nominee, they generally don't get too deep into policy discussions, whether it's at the convention or even once he attains the White House. I don't think it was a big deal. As I watched the speech, she did an absolutely phenomenal job, was an absolutely amazing speaker, and the convention center was just rocking, and we all were on our feet clapping for Melania Trump.
We've got 30 seconds left here, Joe Hewn. Bill Schuette addressed the convention. He talked about the Flint water crisis. How did you assess his remarks to the convention?
I have to be frank. I was on the platform committee, and we were called to our committee meetings while the Attorney General spoke. And I actually apologized to him that I missed his whole remark. So I don't even know what he said, and I apologize for that.
That's all right. We want to thank our guest, Senator Joe Hewn, as a Trump delegate in Michigan. He represents the 22nd State Senate District, which includes Livingston and part of Washtenaw counties. Joe Hewn, good to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
Coming up on Current State, for Neighbors in Action, we'll speak with the executive director of the Women's Center of Greater Lansing, Cindy Allwood, and the coordinator of its upcoming garden tour fundraiser, Heather Spots. That's on the way. Neighbors in Action here on Current State. Well, what a week for the Ann Arbor Art Fair. It's a 57-year-old tradition that many spend the whole year waiting for, although this year they've had to wait an extra day. Current State's Brooke Allen is here to explain. Hi, Brooke.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Yes, the days have been altered this year for the art fair, but I spoke to Karen Delhay, the executive director of the Guild of Artists and Artisans and spokesperson for the Ann Arbor Art Fair, and she says the days have been changed this year for the first time ever, but it really doesn't matter. Everyone is so excited because the fair is just that big of a deal.
It is a big deal. It is. It's one of the oldest and largest in the nation.
So usually, we're talking on a Wednesday, and usually this would be in full swing, but there's been kind of a schedule change this year.
There has. We have switched, after 57 years, of Wednesday to Saturday, we have switched to Thursday to Sunday.
So can you tell me why the change?
So back when the fair started back in 1960, times were a little bit different. You know, things weren't open on Sunday. Retail wasn't open on Sunday. You saw a lot more women staying home and were able to come out during the week. Now, as times have changed and you're seeing more families with dual incomes, we thought it would be better to make it more accessible to people by adding another weekend day. So the shift to Thursday to Sunday made perfect sense.
Has there been any fallout about that, or have people been pretty accepting?
Actually, we were surprised. You know, it started out anecdotally. We would hear from guests that they couldn't believe it wasn't on Sunday. So then we started surveying our artists to see what they thought about it, and they all were in favor of it. And then as we started to go to our partners and the city and things like that, the support for it was really overwhelming. So we were very happy about the switch, and it turns out most people are too. So it's a great thing.
So when we're talking about artists, you have a ton of artists involved in this event.
We do. We have over 1,000 jury-selected artists. So basically, each artist has to go through an application process and submit their work online to be reviewed and scored. And the highest scorers get invited to participate in the fair.
And then, okay, so that's the artist. And then how many people come to this on a yearly basis?
We get hundreds of thousands of visitors every year to the event.
And we're not just talking about art. I mean, there are a ton of activities going on as well.
There are. There's, in addition to the art, there's an art activity zone where kids of all ages, we stress that because the adults can do this too, can go in and try their hands at all kinds of different activities. We have some clay building going on, puppet making, there's record cover design, we have a masterpiece taking shape on Ingalls Mall, we have a chalk artist coming and she's going to be recreating Salvador Dali's Melting Watch. In chalk, so that'll be happening throughout the 4 days of the fair. We have three stages for people to enjoy lots of different varieties of music and dancing. We have, of course, all the wonderful shops and restaurants in downtown Ann Arbor. We have artist demonstrations, and of course, there's great people watching at the fair as well.
Oh, yes, we cannot discount the people watching.
No.
I think that's probably most of the fun right there, wouldn't you think?
Right.
I think we'd have to consider that actually part of the art.
Yeah, it can be.
It most certainly can be. Okay, so tell me something about, if you have never been to the art fair, tell me something that someone would definitely need to know about it, something special.
So I think one of the big things is how large it is. So I think you should plan accordingly when you're coming out. It does cover 29 city blocks. Wear comfortable shoes, wear comfortable clothing, bring plenty of water when you're coming out. So I tell people always the best course of action for coming to the fair is to plan ahead. Make sure you get online. We have, you can visit the AnnArborArtFair.com. We also have a mobile app. It's available on Google Play and the Apple Store. It's under A2 Art Fair. But it helps people plan their course of action, how they want to get into the city, how they want to get to the fair, whether it's parking on site or one of our three shuttles. They can do that and shuttle in. Once they get on site, they can walk the entire event. And then we have what's called an Art Go Round, which is a shuttle service that takes you around the fair. So you can get here, you can walk the whole thing, decide you're too tired to walk back. You can hop on the Art Go Round for free and ride all the way back to your starting point. Or if there's an artist you missed and you just want to get over to a certain area, you can do that as well. I highly stress taking advantage of that Art Go Round because, like I said, it's free, it's air conditioned, and it's conveniently located. There's 8 different stops that you can get on and off at. So,
and probably not a bad idea if you've got some cranky kids with you, I guess, huh?
Yes, that's true too.
So what? So if somebody has been there, if they were there last year, and there was an artist they really loved their work, what are the chances that that same artist would be there this year?
So the chances are pretty good. They may be in a different section of the fair, but the chances are pretty good that they're back. A lot of our artists do return year after year, but we also get a large percentage of new artists as well. So you can all the artists are listed in the mobile app. They can find them on the website beforehand if they want to research and see if they're here again. And then we have every artist listed in the guide, so they can stop at any info booth and try and see if they can find who they were looking for.
How much planning goes into this event?
A lot. So we'll start up the day after we shut down
Monday?
For this year. We'll start up for next year. So
as far...
It's a long process.
I'm sure. So you did mention the transportation around the art fair. Let's talk about the transportation issues that people may encounter getting to the art fair. I do know that there is construction around Ann Arbor. And do you foresee any issues with that, or... are there special detours being listed, or can you address that at all for me?
So there is construction on 14. The good news about that construction is it does dump you off at Main Street. So that's your ticket in right there. You can get right to the fair off Main Street from 14. 94 is in good shape. If you come in through 94, you can access both shuttles there, two of the shuttles there. You can access the Briarwood Mall one and Pioneer High School. Those are both off of 94. And then we have a shuttle off of 23 at Huron High School. So I think we have you covered coming in. We can get you in safely and through the construction.
Okay. And then the hours, what are the hours?
Thursday to Saturday, we run 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. And Sunday, we're here from noon to 6.
Okay. And so pretty accommodating. I mean, for kids, for senior citizens...
There is something for everyone. We do have wheelchairs on site. If people get here and need a wheelchair, they're free to borrow. You can stop by. We have a location at State and Madison right next to one of the shuttle stops, and then there's one at Washington and Fletcher.
Okay, so I have to ask you this. What is your favorite part of the art show?
Okay, so that's like asking me to pick one of my favorite kids. I tend to buy a lot of jewelry, so that tends to be a favorite. I love the 2D work. One of the best parts of the event for me, honestly, is prior to the event, and it's when the jury happens and seeing all the art that comes in that we get to go through, and it's almost like Christmas morning, seeing what's there, what's new, what's different.
So jewelry. Okay, good. I'm happy to hear that. So my husband will not be, but I'm very happy to hear that.
Every year. I actually pre-bought this year, and I'm already wearing a pair of earrings from an artist that's coming.
Nice.
So, you do what you gotta, right?
Exactly. I was just going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
You do what you have to do. It's just how it is.
Right.
So real quick, what is, if an artist is interested in submitting their work, what did they have to do?
So the applications actually open in November prior to the fair, so the year before the fair. So after this year, the applications will start opening in November, some as early as October. So you can get online. They have to apply digitally. It's through each fair uses a different process, but they're all done digitally through Zapplication or Juried Art Services. They apply. The applications stay open usually until the end of January, and then the jury happens, and artists start getting invited in February and March, and so it's kind of that goes into that whole year-long process thing. But it does happen earlier. We do get calls at the last minute, like, I would like to participate in the fair, and it's, you know, we've already juried for this year, and we refer them to the following year.
Okay, so really, if you're an artist out there and you hear this and you really want to get involved, you need to start thinking in advance.
Next year,
obviously. Okay, well, thank you so much, and I hope it's a great time. And you know what? I will look for you, and we'll pick out some jewelry together.
That would be great. I hope you do.
And you have a great time, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So, Mark, obviously the Ann Arbor Art Fair going to be packed, but it is also going to be extremely hot. Temperatures are expected to be in the 90s all weekend, which means you really want to plan ahead. Not that you need a lecture, but, you know, plenty of sunscreen and drink lots of water, because shopping for jewelry can get very exhausting. For Current State, I'm Brooke Allen.
And coming up on Current State, Claude Shannon was a mid-20th century professor at the University of Michigan and MIT, and was one of the fathers of today's digital age. Current State's Peter Wharf brings us the story from a recent Michigan History Magazine profile. That and more after the break on Current State. Well, every week on Current State's Neighbors in Action, we learn more about the work of a mid-Michigan nonprofit organization. The Women's Center of Greater Lansing provides counseling and support to help women realize their potential and become financially independent. This Sunday, as it turns out, they're hosting a fundraising garden tour featuring landscapes in East Lansing, Okemos, and in Lansing. Here to tell us more about it and about what they do, Executive Director Cindy Alwood and Heather Spots, volunteer and coordinator of the garden tour. Cindy, Heather, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. You just celebrated your 11th year.
Yes.
Of helping women in the community. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell us about the origins of the Women's Center.
Well, it was kind of a casual thing at first. I was involved with a group, the National Organization for Women, and we had a hotline at that time. And we were getting phone calls from women that we just did not have anywhere to send them. Mm. We couldn't help them. We couldn't make referrals. We just didn't know what to do, and they were definitely in need. And there just wasn't anywhere for them to go for help. And so we decided that since Lansing is the capital city of Michigan, that it was about time that we had a women's center, and that's really how it happened.
Mm. Describe your clients for us. What kinds of circumstances are they typically in when they seek you out?
Well, it varies. It really varies. There could be women who just come in because they need help with a resume, and they may have just gotten laid off from a job or downsized out or are going back into the workforce after raising their families, all the way to women who, about 75% of the women that we serve have a history of domestic violence.
Mm. Heather, you're a volunteer for the Women's Center, but you're a medical social worker by profession. In your view, why are these services that the Women's Center provides important here in the Lansing area?
Well, I have been an active referral person to the Women's Center while working with my patients. And what I found is they help those women that potentially or already have fallen through the cracks because we haven't been able to find other services to meet their needs. They're about healing for women, but also empowering. So they have given many of my patients an opportunity to move forward from their life, from a tough situation into a better, not only by supporting the emotional healing that's needed, but helping them get the tools to find work, find education, find housing, and just have a safe place to pursue what's important to them to better their life.
What are some of the particular circumstances, though, that you might lead you to refer somebody to the Women's Center?
Sure. I have had many women that have crossed my path in my work that have been, you know, homebound, related to anxiety, depression, have lost work, have lost financial resources, relationship. And I've referred them to the center. They may have started out pursuing counseling with one of the many counselors or interns that works at the Women's Center, and then ultimately gained the confidence to join the job bank there, to pursue opportunities in the community, join volunteer opportunities. Many support groups are offered as well that many of my women have taken part in.
Cindy, is there a particular story here that comes to mind that really kind of captures, that illustrates the importance of what you do? Somebody you've worked with at
yes.
the center.
Yes, this was a client of mine personally. She was from Michigan, but had left to go south to care for a parent and who I think had cancer or something. She had been there. She left the workforce, and she had a son still that was under 18 and took him with her. And her parent died. I think it was her father. And she needed to come back to Michigan because there really wasn't anything for her to do there. And she'd been working those jobs that we do while we're looking for something better, a lot of customer service related stuff and that sort of thing. And when she came in, she was very tearful because she needed a job desperately, but didn't feel like she had any skills whatsoever. And so we sat down and had a conversation about the things that she had done, and I started making notes. And by the time she was done, an hour later, we had a whole resume that we could put together for her, because she didn't think about the skills that she had. She just thought, well, these are just, you know, dead end, frontline, minimum wage type jobs. But she had a lot of responsibility in those jobs. And so when we started parsing out and putting in categories and looking at the whole picture, she had 10 years of solid job history. And the gap in her job history was easily explained by this caregiving that she was doing for her father. So I put together a resume for her. We took her up to the clothes closet. We have a professional clothes closet. Got her outfitted, sent her resume out to a couple of places, and within a week she was employed.
So you took a glass half full. You took a glass that she thought was half empty and made it half full.
Right,
instead.
And that happens a lot with our clients, is they don't realize what they do have to offer.
Skills assessment,
yeah,
that kind
exactly.
of thing. Heather, a part of the nature of your work with the center is event coordinating, and we've got a garden tour here to talk about this Sunday. Where did this idea come from?
Well, one of those cold winter days, dreaming about my garden, I wanted to do something for my favorite nonprofit, the Women's Center of Greater Lansing. And so the idea was born, can I get some like-minded people that would like to support a grassroots effort and raise money? And people jumped right on the idea. So we found myself, six other homeowners who were willing to open up their garden and yards this Sunday to inspire and get people excited about gardening and bring more awareness to the Women's Center.
Seven Gardens, East Lansing, Okemos, and Lansing. I'm speaking with two guests here today about the Women's Center of Lansing. Heather Spotts is a volunteer and a coordinator of this weekend's garden tour fundraiser. One of her gardens is on the tour, as it turns out. Also, Executive Director of the Women's Center of Greater Lansing, Cindy Allwood. You offer a variety of support groups. You've already alluded to this, Cindy. Can you name some of the more durable ones, the more popular ones, and tell us a little bit about them?
Well, our primary focus is employment and the economic self-sufficiency. So our job seeker support group is one that we always have going. Sometimes it has a different name than job seeker support, but that's what it is. And that's been going, I think, for 10 years on and off on different days. When we run out of people, we change the day and the time, and usually we get some new folks mm-hmm. involved. We have a sexual assault support group and a domestic violence support group. I think one of the only DV groups that meets on the weekend. And that's for safety.
Is the awareness of the group what you would like it to be? You've been around a long time. You're in a prominent storefront, or mm-hmm. You're on Michigan Avenue
yes.
in Lansing. Is the profile of the group what you would like it to be?
Oh, heck no.
No, we'd
like to have it, you know, right. We'd had like to have Broadway lights. And I will say, I found this out last week that we were a Pokemon Go stop last week.
Oh.
One of our interns, it was thrilling. But I didn't find out till it had already passed, so I couldn't brag about it on
Pokemon
social media.
Pokemon Go is generating traffic.
That's what it's doing.
It is.
It's also generating accidents. So, being on Michigan Avenue, we have enough of that already. We're 5 blocks from Sparrow Hospital, and so we have to be really careful when we're out because no one's focused on us. They're focused on the hospital.
How has serving women in your capacity, Heather Spotts, as a social worker, how has it changed in recent years? If assuming it has changed, maybe it hasn't.
Yeah. Oh, it absolutely has changed. I've been around a little while doing this, about 20 years plus. And probably over the last few years, we're, of course, seeing an increase in needs with poverty. I'm personally a medical social worker, so seeing more disparity, underinsured, those type of challenges for women being a barrier in terms of looking for jobs and looking for support. Housing continues to be a peaking issue, affordability for women who are trying to start on their own and have their own housing.
Let's talk briefly about your volunteer corps. Do you need more volunteers? And what kind of activities would volunteers typically get involved in at the Women's Center?
Well, that's one of our challenges, is that we can always use more volunteers, but we have a confidentiality issue, and so we have to screen, and we have a vigorous orientation and training program. And where we really need volunteers and where it's easier to plug people in is in our events. The day-to-day stuff we have covered with our interns. And we use a large number of interns from undergraduate interns from Michigan State and Lansing Community College.
We've got to move on here, but you've got the garden tour here mm-hmm. this Sunday.
Yep.
I'm sure they can learn more about that at your website, which
yes.
is?
womencenterofgreaterlansing.org.
Very basic. We
yep.
want to thank our guests, Executive Director of the Women's Center of Greater Lansing, Cindy Alwood, and Heather Spotts, a volunteer and coordinator of this weekend's Garden Tour fundraiser. Cindy, Heather, thank you for joining us
today. Thank you for having
us, Mark. Have a great Sunday.
Thank you.
Current State is looking for more nominations for our Neighbors in Action feature. Please help us out and email us your suggestions to currentstate@wkar.org. Put Neighbors in Action in the subject line or tweet us. @KAR Current State, please tell us a little bit about why you think they should be featured for the great work they do. I'm Mark Bayshore. Claude Shannon used to ride a unicycle while juggling, but he was no novelty act. Shannon was a world-class engineer and mathematician whose work on digital circuits, essential to the design of modern computers, changed the world. 2016 will mark the 100th anniversary of his birth. Michigan History Magazine contributor Ray Cavanaugh recently profiled the Michigan native, and Peter Worf caught up with Cavanaugh by phone earlier this week. Ray set the scene by recalling Claude Shannon's youth, his dad, and the gift of an erector set.
He had a father who was, I guess, well into his 50s by the time, Claude was born. So he was kind of emotionally distant to some degree, but he did have enough foresight and, I guess, love for his kid to give him this erector set.
The toy that has become as much a part of our life as baseball and hot dogs. Erector has exciting appeal for all boys.
That was just the kind of thing, you know, young Claude wanted, really. He just kept on tinkering with that, and it started his, you know, kind of lifelong vocation. When he was, I think, just a high school kid, really, he made a telegraph line out of barbed wire fences that extended from his residence to the residence of a friend who, I guess, presumably, you know, lived in the town of Gaylord, or at least, you know, in the region. And I guess that the telegraph line actually worked. Then he went on from that to actually do it professionally to some degree while he was still in high school. He was fixing radios for local radio stores, for, you know, local electronic stores and stuff like that. He could see, I guess, a complex problem, and then he could try to find a more simple solution to it. And then he had the tinkering down, so he could just tinker around with it until, I guess, he achieved the desired result that he had, you know, the theory in his head, and find a real kind of practical application for it. He designed all sorts of crazy stuff when he was older, you know, frisbees that were rocket powered. He designed trumpets that were flame throwing trumpets. He designed a computer that calculated only in Roman numerals. I mean, this isn't the kind of stuff that you're going to, you know, get rich by, you know, bringing into the market, into the free market or whatever, you know, but he just liked doing it for its own sake.
I'm speaking with Ray Cavanaugh, author of the recent Michigan History Magazine article, Claude Shannon, Father of the Digital Age. And speaking of the digital age, Ray, Shannon went to the University of Michigan, left his native Petoskey and Gaylord to come to the U of M in the early 30s, where he was exposed to this idea of the simple values of zero and one. Can you talk about his experience there?
I don't think he really knew exactly what he wanted to do with his life. But I think in one of his last semesters, he took this kind of obscure class on the algebra of George Boole, a 19th century, you know, kind of like philosopher, logician, and mathematician.
Where the Boolean now, search comes from.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Boole took this thing where he'd apply the number of one to statements that were true. But then if a statement was false, he'd apply the value, the number zero, to that. Now, ones and zeros, that's, you know, binary numbers, binary math. And, you know, Shannon took the class, but then later on, when he was working at MIT, after he graduated from UM, he was, you know, working with this computer. I think it was the biggest computer, the most important computer in the world at the time, the differential analyzer. It was, you know, it was the height of technology at that time, but it was also this monstrous, you know, this monster of gears and motors, and it'd take, like, you know, a week or more to set up and solve an equation. And while Shannon's working on this thing, he thinks, you know, good grief, this thing's a beast. Like, it could get a lot more simpler than this, couldn't it? So you can see the idea where instead of using all these gears and motors, he'd take, you know, he'd use electrical circuits. And then he took the Boolean algebra he learned at the University of Michigan in that rather obscure class, and he applied it to electrical switches. You know, and if the circuit's on, you give it a value of one. If the circuit's off, you give it the value of zero. And these ones and zeros, these binary numbers, that's basically what everything's about, whatever media you're using, whether it's, you know, a simple text document or whether it's like, you know, some huge, you know, movie you've recorded on, put it on YouTube, or, you know, all the gazillions of selfie images that, you know, people, you know, especially younger people keep taking. When you reduce it down, what describes them is just some huge sequence of ones and zeros, circuits that are turned on and off.
Ray Cavanaugh is the writer of the recent Michigan History Magazine article called Claude Shannon, Father of the Digital Age. We're talking about this native Michigander and graduate of the University of Michigan. He went on to the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Talk about the toy room, this idea of tinkering, always stayed with him. You spoke earlier of some of the kind of crazy inventions that he came up with. One was even a mechanical mouse that would find its way out of a maze. What was happening in his toy room?
All sorts of things were happening in his toy room. This was, I guess, like a man cave for a total genius,
right.
I guess you could say. You know,
yeah.
He would just, I don't know how many men were there, barely just Shannon himself, but he'd shut himself off in this toy room, this house he bought in the Boston suburb of Winchester, Massachusetts. And he would design all sorts of things. You mentioned the mechanical mouse. I think it's his name. The mouse's name was Theseus. And you know, if you look at it at this point in time, you know, year 2015, you know, it's not going to seem like that extraordinary an invention. But I think it was done around 1950. And in 1950, this mouse that could navigate a maze, this was a pretty extraordinary piece of artificial intelligence, you know. He invented these other goofy contraptions that I mentioned about. He also had this other item that he designed in the toy room. It was this mechanical finger that was connected to a cable. And I guess in this way, Shannon would summon his wife to come visit him in the toy room, I guess, to check out his newest, you know, invention or whatever. Because when he pulled the cable, the finger would curl wherever, you know, I guess upstairs in the kitchen or the living room or wherever. And then when Shannon's wife saw the curling finger, she knew that it was time to visit him in the toy room.
Hey, there was another invention that you mentioned in your article about a wearable computer that sounded almost like something out of the Martin Scorsese movie Casino. He took it with him to Vegas. What was that all about?
Yeah. I guess he teamed up with another brilliant mathematician. I think his name was Edward Thorpe. And the two of them, they teamed up and they made some trips to Vegas. And I guess they used this wearable computer and they did make some money out of it. You know, you bring up that Casino film and I can only picture, I mean, back in this day, that was probably kind of a risky thing to do. I mean, as soon as you mentioned that film, I think of that poor con man in the back room where they asked him which hand was his dealing hand or something.
I saw you shuffling your checks with your right hand. Can you do it with your left hand?
Oh, I never tried.
So you're a righty?
Yeah.
Ah! 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 They pounded it to atoms with a hammer or something. So yeah,
I think they said cheater's justice.
Cheater's justice.
Oh gosh. Oh, cheater's justice. Oh, all right. And then they offered the other guy, right, the quarter of the $1 million and the hammer, or you could just walk away without the money or the hammer treatment. But yeah, I guess Shannon didn't get caught. I have no idea what they would have done to him if he had. Yeah.
Ray, I'm going to paraphrase the end of your article where you said that many felt that a comparison between Claude Shannon's great genius and Einstein in some ways credited Einstein too much. Shannon's influence was vast, wasn't it?
Yes. You know, from just the very thing of making computers so much more efficient and smaller and basically set up the whole modern digital computing era. Well, everything we got. You got your MP3 players, you got, you know, modern computers, your high-def TVs, not to mention the internet, probably a whole lot of other things that I'm either failing to remember off the top of my head or that I'm just not even aware of that just run on the technology that Claude Shannon, you know, made possible.
Ray Kavanaugh recently wrote the Michigan History Magazine article, Claude Shannon, Father of the Digital Age. Thanks a lot, Ray.
Sure, thank you.
For Current State, this is Peter Warf.
And that's our show for today. We're glad you could join us tomorrow on Current State. Southwest Lansing was recently awarded a grant to put toward projects that would better the neighborhoods in that area. We'll speak with some members of the group Rejuvenating South Lansing. Elaine Wombolt and Melissa Kwan-Huber join us for an update on those projects along with the discussion of other issues affecting South Lansing. Plus, we all know the phrase, like finding a needle in a haystack. Now imagine the needle has wings, and the haystack is a couple hundred acres wide. That pretty much sums up the environmental expedition Current State's Kevin Lavery went on recently. Kevin joined a team of experts in search of a tiny butterfly that's made it onto the federal endangered species list. That and more tomorrow here on Current State. Peter Wharf is the executive producer of our program. Kevin Lavery directed the show today. Thanks also to Scott Pohl, Jamie Paisley, Katie Cook, Brooke Allen, and Drew Hill. The Current State podcast, informative, insightful, indispensable. Everything that's happening around mid-Michigan and beyond. Anywhere, anytime, the Current State podcast at iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you find podcasts. Stay connected with us on social media as well. Follow us on Twitter at KAR Current State. Also, we're on Facebook at Current State from WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. This is Current State on WKAR.